If you think you can't go from politics to the divide, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Welcome to Above the Fray. I'm Carol Gold. Our number here, 914-803-4522. We welcome you into the conversation. For the next half hour, I and my brilliant co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
We want to take a look at what's going on right now as we speak, both in Congress, in the House Investigative Committee on Benghazi, and also on relative to the House of Representatives, the effort by the Republican Party to elect a new speaker. So both of these are in the news. Both of these are a prime focus of news media, and for many people who are political junkies, I guess, a prime focus as well. And while we don't want to beat a dead horse here, retweet, rebroadcast the news to you, there is an aspect of both of these stories that is common to both of them. And that's really, I think, what Steve and I want to talk about tonight. And the common aspect is deception. So before I go to the obvious, which is the Hillary Clinton testimony, I want to give a little background on something I learned today about the House of Representatives. You know, my neighbor is a Democrat, and she was saying today, you know, how could you want a party to run the country who can't even run their own party? As a Democrat, that's her position on the Republicans, because they can't seem to pick a speaker of the House of Representatives. But I don't really think it's necessarily exclusively a Republican problem. I think there is, in the light of day, very little distance between the Democrats and the Republicans anymore. I don't think we necessarily are living in a two-party system. I think that's an illusion that is perpetrated by the parties themselves and by the fundamental belief that we live in a country that has two predominant political parties. I think that's a historical fact. So the reason that I say that is, number one, I find it curious that relative to Paul Ryan, who now seems to be the front runner or the pick of the crop, as it were, for House Speaker, that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, two political partisan Democrats who have done everything conceivably possible to fight the Republicans during the last administration, are adamantly out there supporting Paul Ryan. Why would Democrats want a Republican Speaker of the House who gave them in any way any kind of opposition? Why would they want that? It begs the question, shouldn't you be concerned off the top as to why the Democrats would be stumping, as it were, for a particular Republican? But in light of this particular Republican, let me say the following. What I learned today, Steve, in listening to, and please, when you hear this name and you're listening to the show, please don't shut off the show when I say the words Glenn Beck, because for a lot of people, that's the death knell, and they're done with anything that comes after that. But hear me out on this. A few weeks ago, the Freedom Caucus, which is the conservative caucus of the House of Representatives, they came to Beck because he's got a footprint. He's got a media footprint of 50 million between his online magazine, his online website, his online television show, the books that he's written, etc., his radio show every day. He's got a 50 million footprint. That's a lot of listeners, and they're a very active audience, and they're very politically active. So the Freedom Caucus came to him, and they said, "We are telling you that we need Daniel Webster as the new Speaker of the House, having gotten rid of Boehner." And by the way, it was Beck's audience that got rid of Boehner. They were the ones who put the pressure on day in and day out to oust Boehner. And that is acknowledged by the House of Representatives itself. The members themselves will tell you it was Beck's audience that did that work. So they came to Beck, understanding the power of his audience, and they said, we need Daniel Webster. And Beck said, I don't get it. He has a voting history that is not conservative at all. And they said, yes, but here's the thing. It's not about conservative or liberal. It's about the procedure and the process of the House. The House's procedure and the House's processes, as defined by the Constitution and as regulated by the laws that regulate the House, the rules that regulate the House, have been completely abandoned. They're not being followed. And that's why there's so much chaos. We need to return to the process and the procedures of the House. And Webster is a dyed-in-the-wool procedural guy. He wants to take the House back to the way it should operate. That way, you get a fair and just result. If the process is it has integrity. So they convinced Beck. And Beck said to them, I'm going to put my neck out there. You want me to put my neck out there for a guy that I don't really get it. So Beck had Webster on the show, and he interviewed him. And I happened to watch that interview and listen to that interview. And Beck really grilled Webster because of Webster's voting record. And when that interview was over, it was clear to anyone listening that Webster was probably the guy because he really did not care about whether you were left or right. He cared about the process of the House working the way it was designed to work. So Beck went public and he said, he's the guy. Webster's the guy. At the time that they were pushing Webster, the Freedom Caucus said, you know, for example, if a guy like Paul Ryan got in, and at the time Ryan wasn't even a candidate, if a guy like Ryan got in, we're done. The Republican Party is done. The 2016 election is over. It'll go to the Democrats. And for all practical purposes, the Republic's over. Because Ryan's a player with the Democrats. He's like a rhino Republican who's aligned with the Democrats. And you really won't have two parties at all. We'll be done. It'll be a country run by a single party and darn close to something like a dictatorship because you're going to have the leader from one party only with no effective opposition. Well, lo and behold, what happened? The Freedom Caucus yesterday, not all of it, 70% of it, endorsed Ryan. They turned their back on Webster, they lied to Beck, and they endorsed Ryan. And now it looks like, although Paul Ryan said if he didn't get 80% of the Freedom Caucus, he would not run. And he's got 70%, so this will be interesting to see what he does, whether he keeps his word. But as an aside, what I found interesting about Paul Ryan is that in his reluctance to be speaker, he's laid out some ground rules for the only conditions under which he'll take the speakership. One of them is he doesn't work weekends because he says he's a family man and he doesn't want to work on weekends. And number two is they have to change the rules that Thomas Jefferson implemented, and they have to make it more difficult to unseat a seated speaker, so that if he becomes speaker, he wants it harder to take him out of the speakership. It's so insane to me. The two demands are so insane to me. They're so arrogant and egotistical and obviously not who we need that I call attention. I had to tell you the whole story. It's been 9 minutes into the show because I want to lay the groundwork for deception. It isn't just deception of the public. It's deception within the system is sick. The system has cancer. And just as Hillary Clinton has been proven to have lied about Benghazi, today in the testimony, she has been revealed to have told her daughter, Chelsea, 2 days after that it was a terrorist attack, yet still went public and even went to the families at Dover Air Force Base of those who were killed in Benghazi and told them it was the result of a video, we're going to get the guy who made it. She told her daughter 2 days later it was, in fact, a terrorist attack. And there's a whole slew of lies for her husband. The Clintons are noted forever and ever. And yet here's my point. And this is what I'm going to give it to you, Steve, on. And I realize I've gone long. Bear with me. My point is, why doesn't it matter anymore that everybody's lying? What has happened to us that lying has become endemic? It's systemic. I don't know how we survive not just a corrupt political class, but a deceitful political class and an apathetic populace. Steve?
Yeah, you've given me a lot there. There's a few things that I want to address. The first thing is I think the way that you titled the show today that we're trying to address is the following, is that it's a theme that we constantly talk about the show, is about the lies being exposed, the truth coming out. And the analysis that I heard on another program this morning was related to the testimony today that we're talking about with Paul Ryan possibly being speaker, was the fact that Paul Ryan is seen as the money guy for the Republican Party. He is seen as the face of the donor class of the Republican Party, which before that it was Eric Cantor, who had lost his election. There was an election in November where they kicked out a lot of the Democrats, and a new set of Republicans came in. In a sense, we have the same thing. And so what's becoming more and more clear is that within the Republican Party, there is a donor base that essentially rules the party. And that donor base has essentially the same kind of views that the Democrats have. The main issue that comes to mind is mass immigration, where I think there's an agenda at play that they want to get mass immigration. I think we are coming to a point where we are going to have one political party, and the political party is going to be essentially a monarchy, and the power is going to be switched off, you know, between different leaders at different points. But essentially, I think we're at a point where we no longer have a constitutional republic led by our leaders that are looking out for the best for the people being governed. I'm reminded of a story, you know, with Vietnam with Robert McNamara, where if people don't remember Robert McNamara, he was kind of the chief principal architect.
He was Secretary of Defense.
Right, corrector in the Vietnam War. And essentially what he was the guy that implemented all the war strategy. And he was not a military man. He was kind of this genius wonk from the Ford Motor Company. And he ran the war. Based on what he believed, what were sound business principles. And if you look at it, it was an absolute farce, an absolute disaster. And a lot of people have called for his head. Because the mistakes that he made were tragic in nature. I mean, it killed millions of people. The reason I go there is. The analysis that a lot of people had after the fact was that McNamara had certain beliefs on reality, not based on truth, but on things that he wanted to believe were true. The truth was in front of him, that the policies that he was enacting was going to lead to a disaster, but he held firm to his beliefs, and it was not based on truth. And the reason I bring it up is there were fantasies. And we live in a world, I think, many political parties have a belief in certain fantasies that we can continue to go on this journey and not have tragic consequences. The sense that we can have mass immigration to this country and not have it impacted in such a manner that we are going to lose the country as a democratically republic-based country based on the founders, I think is a fallacy. I think the leaders know it, but I think the people are being sold a fallacy. And that's really what I wanted to get to is kind of the testimony with Hillary Clinton today and the Paul Ryan movement. The media and the politicians are complicit in selling a political fantasy that they would like to believe, but is not based or grounded on any truth.
But I want to say something. I listened, I watched the, I've been watching for several hours today, off and on, the Hillary Clinton hearing. And I'm watching it on C-SPAN on my iPad, and so when they break for lunch or whatever, C-SPAN takes callers. Now, I grant you, anyone who's listening to C-SPAN obviously has a political interest. Whatever position or party you're in, you have a political interest. The calls to C-SPAN are pretty, for the most part, pretty enlightened calls. And the people who, I saw two kind of callers. I saw people who are infuriated at the deception that we're talking about. People who are infuriated by her getting away with the deception. And then all the other callers were pretty much pro-Hillary because, A, we need a woman president. She's seasoned. She's been around. There's two mindsets calling in. One is, this is all a farce. And they're the people who kind of are where we're coming from. They get it. They see the manipulation. They see the deception. And they're angry at it. A lot of those people probably are Trump, followers of Donald Trump, they at least get why he's so popular. And it's because he simply won't play that game. And we've talked about this on the show. So my frustration is this, and I know we talked about this off air, but I want to talk about it now as well. There seems to me to be only two kinds of people out there right now in the United States, for the most part. There's always exceptions. But there are those people who are aware and awake, and they get that we're being lied to, and they get that the system is broken, and they get that we're still being manipulated, lied to, and that we're headed in a really dangerous direction. Then there's this other group of people who either they don't care or they don't want to know. But they're living in a world where none of that is going on. And they can say things like, well, we need a woman and she's seasoned and she survived all sorts of challenges and they can never get anything on her because she hasn't done anything wrong. It's sort of, there are people who, and I'm not just saying they're only Hillary Clinton advocates, there are people who are Republican Party registrants and who support Republican candidates who are as equally delusional. And I say delusional because they don't seem to want to know what the facts are, because the facts at the very least make you say, I may not know the truth of what's going on, but I know enough to know that what I'm being told is a lie. There aren't enough of those people around. And so I don't see an end to this, quite honestly, and I don't like to be pessimistic, but I don't see an end to this because I don't see enough people caring that this is going on. The place I see it most are in the followers of Donald Trump and in the followers of Bernie Sanders, because those people are clearly saying we're fed up. The Trump people are fed up with the way they're talked to and lied to. The Sanders people are fed up with crony capitalism. The Trump people aren't fed up with crony capitalism because Trump's a crony capitalist. And you can't be fed up with crony capitalism and be in favor of Donald Trump. He's part of the problem. As plain spoken as he is, and as arrogant as he is, and as well funded as he is that he can speak his own mind, he is definitely part of what has been the problem. And he would continue to be, and I see him like a dictator. I don't see him like a Ronald Reagan, quite honestly. I see him like an Adolf Hitler. And I don't mean that he's Hitler, please, but I'm talking about two extremes. I don't see him, because lately I see lots of articles about Trump is Reagan, only we don't get it yet. The press doesn't get it yet. I don't think he's Ronald Reagan. I think Ronald Reagan had infinitely more integrity and infinitely more character than Donald Trump will ever have in his life. But what I'm saying is that right now, when I look at him, I see him as someone who gets into a position of power, and then because he loves power and he thrives off of it and he abuses it, he abuses power. I can't imagine giving him the most powerful position in the world. It seems bizarre to me that people would want to do that. So the Trump people are not people who are against crony capitalism. They just want to hear it straight. And they want somebody who says, I know what I can do about it, even though they don't want to ask him with specificity, what is it that you're going to do about it? The Bernie Sanders people are just sick of crony capitalism. They're socialists, they're communists, and they're people who are Democrats and tired of the 1%, tired of the rich having it all, and they fundamentally believe in redistribution of wealth. They fundamentally believe in government taking care of everything. And so they're the two groups of people. Steve, there's a lot of background noise. There's two groups of people who are awake in their own way. They're awake in their own way. But it doesn't begin to dent the 307 million people who live in this 307 million people who live in this country. It doesn't even make a dent, those two groups of followers. So I am concerned because we've stopped caring about what's going on around us. And part of it is deliberate. We've talked about this before. Part of it is keeping us so overwhelmed that we can't care because we're just so busy treading water trying to keep up in our own lives. And the other part of it is the pace of the technology, the speed at which we're living. It's humanly impossible to keep up with the rapid changes and the rate at which our lives are being accelerated as we try to keep one foot in 3D reality where all this is happening and another foot in the reality where time warps, where the technology makes everything so fast that it almost defies three-dimensional time as we understand it. You can't live in both worlds and you can't keep up. And so we're all overwhelmed, we're all frustrated, and the two approaches are either one, to be active and be indignant and try to do something about it in your own small way, or two, to turn it off and not care and say, you know what, there's nothing I can do, it's much bigger than I am. And I think most people are in group number two. It's much bigger than I am, it's too much, I can't care, and yet, what I want to leave this with you, Steve, is I see all throughout human history, it's generally one person who makes the difference. One voice does make a difference. Not everybody's a Gandhi. Not everybody is a Moses. Not everybody is a Jesus. Not everybody is a Joan of Arc. But those people come along, and they are an example that if you have certainty in what you believe in, and you truly believe in something that is good, something for the highest good, just like if you have certainty and believe in something that is bad, if you're Adolf Hitler or you're the Islamic terrorists, if you have certainty and passion about what you believe in, you can make a difference. I believe there are many individuals in this country who can make a positive difference. I just think they're worn out and they think they can't make a difference. They don't understand how really empowered you are with the internet at your fingertips and being able to get information out there. So a lot again, Steve, but I'll turn it over to you. Oh, Steve, wait, I have a question. You said something I didn't understand. You said the donor base of the Republican Party has a similar intention as the Democrats, and you use as an example immigration. I don't understand. I know why the Democrats want unfettered immigration. They're Democrat voters. Why does the Republican donor class want I think I know what you're going to – you know what? It just came to me. It's cheap employment, isn't it?
It's cheap labor. Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's the irony is that most of the people that are what call the Republicans, most of them are self-made men and women that have come up to the ranks. But there's a deal that gets made that's been made, and I think Obama's been really smart about it. I'll give you an example. The Obamacare was essentially a disaster for the health insurance companies, the drug companies, and the medical profession. And what he did is that he offered them a deal. He offered them money that the whole program would have to go through them. The exchanges, the medical care would be concentrated in a power of few hands. And so overnight, instead of having to compete for years and years on price on technology, on innovation. The government essentially partnered up with a handful of firms, and they sold themselves out to the highest bidder, and they got themselves a deal. And I think it's the same, that same adage is the same way with cheap labor. Maybe I'll give another example. If you look at the issue with Walmart right now, if you follow the news, Walmart has signed on for implementing higher wages, which is what the government wanted. And the belief is that many in the business community is that it's much easier to kill your competition if you are a preferred vendor of the government. And so Walmart is now going to be protected in many, many regards by the government. And I think it's the same way with cheap labor. To the extent that they can get cheaper labor in the workforce, that it's going to benefit the very wealthy and the people who own very large corporations and the shareholder class. So it's really kind of essentially two parties that are working against the middle class or the lower middle class who want to move forward through the economic life cycle where they gain skills and they can learn how to make money and then be more prosperous later on. What's happening is that they're being conspired against, that those opportunities are going to be vastly reduced, and the people who have power have more of an ability now to concentrate their power and wealth in their own hands. So that's why I think the American public has become so disheartened, because there is no ideological purity anymore. It's really kind of a crony capitalism on the Republican side, and on the left side, it's kind of the policies that help the lower class through buying votes through social welfare programs. So that's why I think it's such a disturbing trend right now.
Well, you're being kind by calling it a trend. I think it's an entrenchment. I think that's where we are. I don't even think it's a trend. I think it's where we've kind of settled in at, and it's become the norm, not the aberration. And you know, you mentioned earlier about immigration. That Hungary sealed their border, and they stopped. Hungary had 10,000 immigrants a day coming in. They put up a wall, and they've now got 40 a day coming in. Because you don't have a country, and we said this before, when you don't have borders. And it's no different for us here. This mass immigration, whether it's by the Republicans because they want the cheap labor, or it's by the Democrats because they want the vote, will be the death knell of the United States, literally. It will be the death knell. Because you cannot so subvert a culture with people who are of a different culture, who don't speak the language, who aren't part of the process, who aren't held accountable to the laws that other people are held accountable for. You can't just bring mass amounts of people of other cultures with different values into a closed system and expect that closed system to remain the way it was when it was truly closed. And so the real danger, I think, of both of these parties is that they both have the Republicans an economic agenda, the Democrats a power agenda. Both of them are using immigration to feed their beasts, to feed their labor needs, and to feed their power needs through voting. And they're so busy feeding their own lust, as it were, that they're doing in the country. And so if you're going to get active about anything, we've got less than a minute, but I would say get active about immigration, get serious about the border, you know, be heard about all of that, because that's probably, at the moment, it's the greatest threat to our future existence. Sorry that we're out of time, everyone. We tried to cover a lot in today's show, and we know we jumped around a little bit, but a lot of important issues were raised nonetheless. It's what we always try to do. Here at Above the Fray, I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back again Monday night at 6 p.m. And until then, spread the word. Steve and I are here to try to be our own little light unto the nation. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.